This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. Another fantastic episode of Solve It for Kids coming up. And today, I have a feeling that our guest is going to transform me from a galactic space geek into a galactic ocean geek.
Ooh, I can't wait. So what problem is our guest solving today?
Why are squid squishy?
Why are squid squishy? This is going to be so much fun. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is Dr. Sarah McAnulty, and she is a squid biologist and science communicator who teaches everybody about squid and all of those other cool squishy animals in the oceans.
That's fantastic. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so we are so excited. And I mean, squid is so cool. I mean, I have to ask, why did you pick squids to study?
That's a good question. So when I was young, I spent a lot of time at the library with my mom, and I would often check out any like nature related videos that they had. Back in the day, we couldn't go on YouTube because YouTube didn't exist at the time. Yeah, I rented this video on the ocean. I watched it over and over and over again. And about halfway through, Twilight Zone music played, like spooky music played. Ooh. And they introduced the cuttlefish. And cuttlefish are super closely related to squid. They look a lot like squid. They change color just like squid. And I just like couldn't believe an animal that weird and cool existed. And I was pretty much hooked from then. I just thought they were so wild and exciting. I decided right then, I was about 8, that squid were it for me.
Okay, at 8, you decided squid was it. Do you have a PhD in squidology?
I sort of do. I have a PhD in cell and molecular biology, because there's really no such thing as like a PhD in squid. You get your PhD in whatever the questions you're asking are, what realm they're in. So I was looking at the cell biology of squid.
Your question is, why are squid squishy? And I think this is so cool because haven't squid escaped tanks kind of like octopus and all that kind of stuff too?
Octopus are the notorious tank escapers for sure. I don't know if squid have escaped any tanks to my knowledge, but I wouldn't put it past them. That's for sure. They've been known to jet out of their tanks. So they move by something called jet propulsion. Oh. And so that basically means that they take a bunch of water into their body and then they squeeze it really, really, really fast out of a little hole called their siphon. And using that power, it's kind of like if you blow up a balloon and then you just like let go, you'll see it like go all over the room. It's a lot like that, but squid have it more controlled than that balloon that you let go. That's one way that they've gotten out of their tanks, but scientists have realized how squid tend to get out and then make tanks that prevent that from happening.
Oh, well, there you go. Be smarter than the squid. That's what you're saying, huh?
Exactly. Easier said than done.
And as you were just describing how squid swim, I'm imagining some of our listeners, since it's summertime right now, they're going to be underwater trying to figure out like whatever that movement is to be able to swim faster.
It's tough for a human to do, because we just can't do it. It's just not going to work. But if you've ever had one of those little torpedo toys, they're like little torpedo-shaped rubber toys. If you ever like let go of one, you'll really see how important it is for animals to be what we call hydrodynamic. It's like aerodynamic, but underwater. And squid are phenomenally hydrodynamic. So they're really, really good at not having a lot of drag and just being perfectly shaped to slide through the water with that power that they have.
So are they also squishy? Can they get into small spaces?
They're not good at squeezing through small spaces like octopuses are. Octopuses are squishier than squid, hands down, no question. Because some squid, not all squid, have what's called a pen inside their body. This is a way, way back in evolution, squid had shells. And so originally they were on the outside of the squid's body, a lot like a snail. That's the kind of animal that they evolved from. And then over time, they were like, you know, these shells are just weighing us down. Let's chuck them and we'll go faster. But it took a long time to make that happen. And in the process, they brought the shells inside their body. Some squid have totally chucked them, like don't need them, don't make them. But some squid, like if you've ever had calamari, the squid that you'd eat for calamari, those squid have pens. And they look a lot like a feather pen, like those old timey feathery. And so because of that, it helps give the squid structure and it helps them maintain that torpedo-like body pattern. They're a lot faster in the water than an octopus because of that shape. But it also means that they can't really bend that pen because it just isn't good for them. So they are squishy. If you touch them, they just are not as squishy as a jellyfish, but pretty, pretty squishy. Yeah, they don't have bones, which is one of the reasons that they're squishy, but some squid do have that internal shell that is like barely there, but just there enough to make it really hard to totally change your shape.
That is really cool. Knowing that you wanted to study squid since you were eight, I have a question because I've done a bunch of different things in my life. I've always wondered, is there enough to learn and know and then problem solve to take that knowledge out in the world just studying one animal like squid? And obviously I want to lean towards the answer is of course, because that's what you're doing.
Of course.
But can you tell us about that?
Yeah. The thing about squid that makes them so fun to study is that there are 300 different types of squid that we know of. There are a lot of different ways to be a squid. And squid live pretty much in anywhere that there's salt water. They don't live in freshwater, but they do live in all of our oceans and seas and all of that. So since there are so many different types of squid, we haven't even scratched the surface in understanding what they all do. The other contributing thing here is that a lot of squid live very deep, deep, deep in the ocean. Yes. And so we just haven't seen a lot of them. Like there's, there's so many, I don't even know where to begin. The colossal squid is the biggest, the heaviest squid there is. They're huge. Like
huge. How big are we talking?
We're talking like the length of a school bus. And
what? Is that just the body or is that the body and the legs?
That's the body and the legs. But still, their bodies are just like very thick and round and big. They weigh about 500 kilograms. So that's what? Over 1,000 pounds? They're large. And so these squid, we didn't even know they existed until pretty recently, like in the last couple decades, because we never saw them because they live in the Southern Ocean. So that's like all around Antarctica. It is hard to get to the Southern Ocean. It is dangerous to get there. The water there is rough. And so humans just generally don't go that often. And so we never had the opportunity to bump into colossal squid, but they're so big. They have these adaptations that are different from other squid. So squid, they're torpedoes. They've got 8 arms, just like I do. And they have 2 tentacles. Tentacles are really, really, really rubbery and stretchy. And they're like rubber band stretchy. Okay. So they are normally, you don't normally see the tentacles because they're kind of like tucked in between the legs, the arms rather. And so they only really use them when it's time to attack prey. And so they just kind of keep them all tucked until it's time to eat. And then they shoot out in front of them and then kind of like clap the prey and then pull it back to their mouth. Their mouth is a beak, which is wild. Their beaks look a lot like a parrot's beak.
Really?
So if you've ever seen a parrot's beak,
Oh my gosh.
So on those tentacles, the tentacles are mostly rubber bands. And then it's kind of like, almost have like little hands, what we call clubs at the tips of the tentacles. And those clubs are covered in suction cups. And so even squid that you're eating calamari, like your what we call the market squid, that's like your basic squiddy squid, they have little rings of teeth. It looks like a little tiny crown. It's like a serrated circle, serrated being like a knife, you know?
Right.
And so they're really, really sharp and it helps the squid dig in and grab onto its food. Now, the colossal squid takes it a step further because not only are those tentacle, they're not just serrated rings, they're actually like hooks, swiveling hooks. It's violent. So imagine you grab something and it tries to get away from you. The swivel hooks will flip around and hook in.
That's like, don't back up at the rental car place. You're going to blow your tires.
That's what we're talking about here.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
So again, we didn't know about this until pretty recently. And it's like, man, if there's a squid that big that we didn't know about, what else don't we know about? There are.
What else is out there?
There's also a squid called the strawberry squid. They're not that big. They're maybe like 6 inches long. They're pretty small. And they're bright red and they have a bunch of little dots on them that we call photophores. Photophores. Photophores are like just the little things that produce light because a lot of squid are bioluminescent on top of all of the other cool things.
Oh, now that's cool.
It's so that's cool. They glow. They can produce their own light. And so these little strawberry squid, they look like strawberries because they have all these little dots. They legitimately look like the little seeds on a strawberry.
Right.
They all glow. All the seeds on the strawberry light up. So amazing. And they live pretty deep in the ocean too. And so there's a lot of stuff happening in the deep sea that it's just hard for us to capture because it's hard to get there. It's expensive to get there. And then you also have to keep in mind, when you go somewhere and you're trying to find animals that have never in their life seen light and you take a bunch of floodlights and you shine it at them.
Oh, yeah. Like,
imagine it's the middle of the night, you're sleeping, and then someone takes the brightest flashlight you've ever seen and shines it directly in your eyeballs. Like, that's not nice. That's not
pretty
pleasant.
Sure I'm
many
leaving.
Of the squid, yeah, are just getting the heck out of there. So what squid have we not seen because they've run away from the light?
That's a great question. I mean, and so here's two questions. One, have you ever been able to dive down and see squid? Thank you. Do you get to do that?
So I dive, but not to the deep sea because a human wouldn't survive that deep.
Yes.
And I haven't gone in one of the submarines into the deep sea, although the scientist who I worked for when I was doing my PhD, he did. And I'm very jealous of him. But also, I kind of like sea level. Like, sea level is safe. I'm not going to get crushed like a tin can. And I'm also not going to get exploded or whatever. I don't know. The space scares me. I'm spaceophobic. Don't want to go. Want to stay right here. But I do go snorkeling. Snorkeling is the best way to catch most of the squid that I work on. So some of the squid, you don't even have to put goggles on. You just walk into the ocean. I collect my squid in Hawaii. The squid that I've worked with in the past that I still collect are called Hawaiian bobtail squid. They're about the size of a small lime. So like if anybody's a cook out there, if you're like a key lime, they're like that small. They're smaller than a regular lime. They're very small. Very cute, rainbow colored, cute as could be. So we just walk out into the beach, like we go to the beach and just walk into the sand and the shore and the ocean. And they'll be hanging out in water like ankle to waist depth. So all we have to do is have our little headlamps on, walking around, look for them. They're rainbow colored, so they're pretty easy to see as long as you have your headlamp on. And then we scoop them up. We put them in little like aquarium bags and then we ship them back to Connecticut alive. So they get sent back in like this literally the same kind of cooler that you might use at a picnic.
That's cool. Would I know that this is a squid versus a jellyfish? You know, like if I were just a layperson.
I think so. So jellyfish are kind of globby blobs and look kind of clear and see-through. They have the long like spindly tentacles hanging off of them.
Okay.
Whereas a squid is like an active swimmer. It is muscly and not see-through. I mean, some of the deep sea squid are see-through, but you're not going to encounter those in the deep. So it's like
not walking into the ocean.
If you're just walking into the ocean looking for a squid, yeah, they look different. One looks like an umbrella with ribbons hanging off of it, and the other one looks like a torpedo. Bobtail squid are a little different because they're more like dumpling ravioli sized and shaped. They still look quite different. Like their shiny and speckled and constantly changing color. And they're actively like swimming and flapping around. So they have these little fins. That's why they're called a bobtail squid.
Right.
They have those little flappy fins.
Okay.
And so you can kind of see them like flip flap in their little fins. And that's quite different from the way a jellyfish moves. And the big thing, like the thing that you're looking for movement wise, jellyfish are kind of like slowly kind of undulating and, right. and like moving like a jellyfish. Sure. And squid are jetting around. And that is different.
Okay,
so got it.
They're much faster and not as like slow and lackadaisical.
As kind of just chilling, right? They have a purpose when they move.
Here we go. You know, and then squid are on the move. They're like, they've got places to be, things to do.
So aside from just being wowed about now wanting to be a galactic ocean geek, I did actually look some stuff up and I literally Googled two words, squid news, just to see if there were squid in the news. Just a couple of days ago, they sent squid to the International Space Station.
They did.
And they happened to be Hawaiian bobtail squid. Why would they send squid to space?
That's my friend Jamie. Jamie and her whole lab down at University of Florida sends squid to space and has done it before and will do it again. And the reason that her lab is studying squid in space, it sounds like a sci-fi movie, right? Like squids in space.
Squid in space.
It sounds a little cuckoo bananas, but there's a reason. So the reason that we study Hawaiian bobtail squid, there's this special type of bacteria. If you don't know at home what bacteria is, it's like these little tiny, small organisms, like little cells. And sometimes they make us sick. And most of the time, they don't do anything. And sometimes they're really, really helpful and good for us. There's bacteria all over your skin, all throughout your digestive system. It's really important to keep us healthy. We need them. The squid need them too. The squid use them to create light. Now, as I mentioned before, there are some squid who make their own light, and that's separate. The bobtail squid can't make its own light. It needs to partner up with bacteria. So they have this little pouch and it's called the light organ, and they keep the bacteria, all the one type of bacteria in this little pouch. And it's kind of like a little flashlight. As the squid is swimming around at night, they're checking on the moonlight coming down from above. And if it's like a bright, cloudless, full moon, bright night, they're going to let a lot of the light from the bacteria out so that they can match the moonlight coming down from above. So if a fish sitting on the bottom of the sand, looking up, trying to find dinner, they're looking for little silhouettes. And so if they see silhouettes, there's dinner. And so they jump up and grab them. Now the squid doesn't want to be seen. So they use light to blend in with the light coming down from above. It's very clever. Now, cool, Sarah, why are they going to space? Okay, so we're looking to see how animals and bacteria are communicating with one another. Because as in humans and all animals, our bodies need to know when a bacterium is good for us, and should stick around, or the bacterium is bad for us. Like maybe we ate like an old piece of fish or whatever, and we get food poisoning. Like our bodies need to know like, oh no, that's salmonella. That's got to get out of here, right? So it's really, really complicated to study this in a human, even a mouse or a rabbit, because those mice and rabbits have like 1,000 species of bacteria living on and in them. The squid just has the one in that light organ. That makes it so much easier to understand. So that's why we study the squid and the bacteria. The reason we're sending them to space is that we don't understand, like if we were to leave space as humans and want to like, first of all, stay healthy with our bacteria on and in us. And what if we wanted to make babies in space? Like what if we wanted multiple generations in space? How do we know that first meeting between bacteria and person, like, how do we know that that's going to go well? How do we know how gravity is going to affect that relationship, that like first meeting, that whole thing? So we're using squid to say like, what happens when a bacterium and an animal meet for the first time in an animal's life in weirdo gravity? It's called microgravity.
Humans are cool because this is a great, like you said, Jeff, a great problem to solve, but like they came up with a way to do that. I love that. That's so cool.
To pick the animal that only has one bacteria so that you can better study the link between, like, that's genius level problem solving. That's terrific. Rather than, like you said, mice that have thousands, like, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
You figured out that's, man, that is a really cool thing.
So Dr. Sarah, what do you study then?
What I was studying for my PhD was looking at how do individual immune cells, how do they tell the difference between so-called in context, good bacteria or bad bacteria? I had some types of bacteria that I knew that the squid was in a healthy relationship and some that I knew were not good for the squid. And so I looked to see, like, how do the immune cells tell the difference? Because they don't have as complex of an immune system as we do. We have, you may have heard, since the pandemic is happening, everybody's literacy on immune systems has gone way up. So I don't have
yes, that's true.
It's really helpful for me. So we have antibodies. That's what your vaccines make or help you make. We have a really complex, like, once we've met a thing in the wild, our bodies usually know that the next time we encounter it, like, I got it, right?
Yes.
And so squid don't have that complex of an immune system. We've got, like, all kinds of different types of immune cells. They've just got the one, which is another reason why it's a nice system. So I was basically like, okay, what is the immune cell using to tell the difference? And it was proteins on the surface of the immune cell smacking into sugar on the surface of the bacteria. And so there's this one sugar on the bacteria that's a little different in between different species. And our little buddy, the bioluminescent guy, does a little modification on that sugar. And then the immune cell's like, gotcha. So that's what we think is going on.
No way.
That's amazing. And then you can hopefully, maybe, I guess the idea is it to extrapolate this to humans or to other organisms and then eventually get to humans so we can understand the human immune system better?
Yeah, this works as a community effort. So, you know, I'm over here, I'm looking at immune cells and squid glowing bacteria. And across the hall from me, Jorg's lab is working on bacteria and leeches. And down the hall, we got somebody working on bacteria and plants, bacteria and flies. And so our little hallway has a lot of different animal bacteria, like, little systems that people are working on. Bacteria and fish is another one. And so it's not as though we're going to study squid and then be like, eureka, and then go. But it's like, let's look at how everybody's doing it so that we can, like, learn principles, like things that apply to everybody.
Right.
So maybe my little study is not going to be the one to solve IBS, but together, like, when we look at when everybody's individually doing their work and then we zoom out, we see patterns. Yep. And that's how the big answers kind of come to be.
Yeah, that's exactly how science works, right? Like, you work together and you bring everything together.
Even if I don't, like, I mean, I'm very social and love talking to all scientists all the time. But even if I was just, like, by myself in the lab, working by myself, once I publish that work, even if I'm not day-to-day working with other people, what I learn enters our community. And that's when we can really, learn things.
You just said that you are super social and you love to talk to people about science and other scientists. Can you tell us about that other project you have?
Yes. So I also run this nonprofit called Skype Scientist. We match up scientists with classrooms, scout troops, book clubs, knitting clubs, libraries, any families on vacation, like any group of people that want to talk to a scientist.
Awesome.
We can match you up. We have thousands of scientists in our program, and it's not just squid people. It's also space people and rock people and people who like whales and, like, all the different types of things. Maybe your classroom has something that you're studying that you want to talk about. Maybe you're talking about, like, colony collapse disorder in bees or whatever. We can find you a bee scientist to talk to. And the whole program is free. There's a suggested donation of $10 a classroom per match. But if you're the kind of classroom that's really strapped for cash and you have to do those donors choose fundraisers, just don't pay us.
Sure.
It's fine. Like, we got it. So if you can afford it, you can help us out. If you can't afford it, don't stress out about it. We can make it happen for you no matter what. We want to remove the barriers to accessing science and scientists. So we have lots of volunteers that are willing to talk to classrooms all over the place.
That's fabulous. And you know, in my experience as a science author, giving the kids access directly to the scientists or the engineers or the experts is where they get to meet people like you about how it's and see how excited you are about what you're studying, because some kids still think that, you know, scientists are all kind of, you know, wear the lab coat and frown and, you know, whatever. But when you talk to them, you see that they love what they're doing and they're very passionate about it. And that's what science should be, right?
Yes, exactly.
And I think it's a great example of the idea that you can love something at 8 years old and still love it as much as you do. Listeners, I wish you guys could see Dr. Sarah talking about this, because she's so animated. She's had a smile on her face this whole time. And this is the thing she fell in love with when she was eight. So, and you're studying basically one thing. You're studying squid. So you said you have thousands of scientists in this Skype of scientists. Obviously, they're not all doing the same thing. So whatever kids and our listeners get interested in could turn into what they get to do for a lifetime. That is super cool.
Now, we ask all of our guests to give our listeners a challenge. So do you have a squid challenge for our listeners, Dr. Sarah?
Yes. Okay. So I firmly believe that the best way to learn about squid is by watching them, because I think that watching them change color, watching them move is really mesmerizing and beautiful. So I want you to go on YouTube and I just want you to look up squid. I want you to watch 5 videos, like pick some different types of squid. Like I said, there are 300 different types of squid, and some of them live super deep. Some of them live super shallow. Some of them are the size of your pinky fingernail. Some of them are the size of a school bus. And so I just want you to watch a couple different squid. There are a bunch of really, really amazing groups of scientists, like the Monterey Bay Aquarium mm-hmm. Research Institute. That's MBARI. Okay. Look them up on YouTube. Their videos are stunning of the deep sea, like totally amazing. And so you can get a group of them there. Just watch them.
I like that challenge. And just as a reminder, since we talked about it early on, the one the size of a school bus, was that the gigantic squid?
Close. The colossal squid.
The colossal.
The colossal.
There's also a giant
squid. I am YouTubing. Okay. Oh, there is a giant squid.
There's a giant squid and a colossal squid. They thought surely no squid gets bigger than this. So let's call it the giant squid. And they found one even bigger and they were like, oh no, this one, we need a word that means bigger than giant. Colossal.
No kidding.
So yeah.
That is so cool.
Well, this has been awesome. Thank you for being on the show, Dr. Sarah. I have learned so much about squid today. And of course, everyone needs to go check out Skype a Scientist.
Yes, we are skypeascientist.com. You can email us at skypeascientist@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram. We post 3 scientists a day that participate in our program at Skype a Scientist on Instagram and Skype Scientist, frustratingly, on Twitter, because Skype a Scientist was taken. That's where you can find us. I really hope you get use out of our program. We're also on YouTube and have a bunch of videos of us interviewing scientists. And in the fall, we have a live stream series starting in September where you can just show up. You don't have to schedule anything. Just show up and ask scientists questions. And we've got everything from geology to wildlife rehabilitation whatever coming up this fall. So
that sounds
very exciting.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on the Solve for Kids podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Sarah. And you have 2 new Skype a Scientist super fans.
Awesome. Glad to hear it.
Well, I was definitely right in the intro. I am absolutely a galactic ocean geek right now. And I know my next YouTube searches are going to be for that giant squid and colossal squid.
I know. I did not know there was a colossal squid. I'm going to have to go find that too. But also, everybody, be sure to check out Skype a Scientist, which is an amazing program where you can actually talk to scientists just like you're doing with us, like we're doing with them. Well, you get to ask them your own questions. So make sure you check that out.
And there are thousands of scientists. So whatever you are interested in, Skype a Scientist has somebody doing that very work for you to talk to and ask questions.
Exactly. And if you don't know where to look, be sure you check out our website, solveitforkids.com. As always, for every episode, our experts have their own website page, and there's more information about Dr. Sarah, squid. Maybe we'll even put a couple of those YouTube videos on there. We do book giveaways and have book list suggestions if you want to find out more.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Where, Jeff?
At Kids Solve.
At Kids Solve. So I don't know about you, Jeff, but I can't wait for next week and another episode of
Solve It for Kids.